Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Good morning, David Slack. How's it going?
Morena, Johnny. Oh, well, I'm as good as you can be when the weather's as shit as this.
Yes, have you been out for a bike ride this morning in the wet weather?
I have not.
Have not?
I tell you what, I have come back so fit from it that I'm determined to stay that fit. And so I did have a huge ride on the weekend and loved it. And another thing that's in, sorry, I won't rave on about this because I keep hogging the airwaves about these bike things, but there is one thing I thought worth mentioning, that because I went back to riding an acoustic bike rather than electric for the big ride in Europe, I've decided that actually they're brilliant electric bikes. I think we should make them free for everybody, but they're such a great hill killer. But if you like to be fit, actually, doing it hardcore without electricity is very good.
Take it back to the old 10-speed.
Yeah, it's true. 30-speed, actually. Oh, that's 30. What I did on Europe, a 30-speed. And when you've got that many to choose from, it's beautiful.
It's easy. Now, okay, we are talking politics this morning. In particular, we are going to be chatting about Shane Jones and some of his invective. This is a new word for me. I didn't know this word before. Just to give everyone a bit of an overview, I've done a bit of a search here. Invective refers to harsh, abusive language or speech that is used to criticize or insult someone. It's often characterized by strong emotions, such as anger or contempt, and may involve personal attacks, name-calling, or offensive remarks. Invective can be verbal or written and is intended to offend or degrade the target. For example, during a heated argument, someone might resort to invective by hurling insults or derogatory comments at the other person. We're talking about Shane Jones and some of his language towards the Green Party. Would you say, just broadly speaking, that invective has become more common in politics in recent years?
Yeah, I would. Partly because it tends to be more concise and, you don't have to lay out your whole argument if you're just being using abusive language or demeaning language, but you know that it's catnip. People like to hear it. We've got an ear for drama. We've got an ear for conflict, and if you wheel that stuff out, people listen. There is a bit of an irony here that I'm finding fault with the utterances of Shane Jones, because as you said, by sharing that excellent definition of invective and showing everybody that it does pay to increase your word power, we're kind of making the case that speaking more with more eloquence is a good thing, and that's something Shane Jones does. And for a long time, I've always found it quite entertaining the way he would you get a bit bloody verbose, to use another one. It's more interesting than the dull stuff that you get from, say, Luxon, which is all just mechanical dog food of the business. But once it hits the invective, as we've got here, it turns into something else. Sorry, I just digressed from your question of is it more common these days? Yes, it is, and it's because it's the lazy way. And Shane Jones has got lazy, essentially. Rather than explore the arguments and that are very substantial and important, crucially important about the climate crisis, he's name calling.
Just ripping a couple zingers on the Green Party. And
I read it to Johnny?
Yeah, go for it. Let's go.
Okay, now is not the time for green wombles. It's black and white decision making. Or the green hobbits are not going to be permitted by NZ First in New Zealand to undermine the existence of the mining industry. Or you cannot power the economy through unicorn kisses or some green god complex, which remains indifferent to the daily costs Kiwis face. And every time. Here's another one. I'll put my credentials up against anyone in the Green Party. Their vision is a Flintstones party. Mine is a turbocharged first world economy. We mine less than 1% of the dock estate, and half of it's not really dock estate. It's overrun by rats and weasels, and the greenies don't even know how to look after it. It was interesting. And when I first read that, I thought he was saying rats and weasels and the greenies, which is, the overall tone of it. And the thing is, every time I go to Facebook these days, I see him wheeling out one of these, and I think, oh, that's not a change. Oh, grow up, will you?
Okay, you go.
It's childish, and it's reducing important arguments to a point that is simplistic and misleading. Mm. To get to the serious point about all this, because, There is absolutely no question we have a climate crisis. There is absolutely no question that we've already hit 1.5% warming. We're busting through to 2, maybe 3. And the consequent, those might sound like little numbers, and he likes to do that too. I like that thing just then about less than 1% of the Docker state. Try putting 1% of lethal poison in your body and see how long you go. You know, numbers mean different things in different contexts. And in the context of global warming, 3% will mean that you've got terrible sea level rise, melt, fires, storms, dislocation on a vast scale, because you're going to have famines, and you're going to have millions, if not billions, of people in the most affected areas having to move. Refugees. You already have it to a reasonable extent coming from South America up to the USA, about which, you know, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance cannot stop talking. You've got it in large measure in Europe, largely because people are coming from Africa for various reasons, but not the least of them being the economic dislocation from what's already happening with the climate crisis. Now, in the middle of all that, he wants to pretend that it's no big deal, that if you make a... put decent emphasis on the climate crisis, you are denying people the right to make a buck, and that would be from say, drilling for oil, digging for gold, despoiling the ecosystem, killing endangered species, hence his expression, where is it? If there's a mining opportunity and it's impeded by a blind frog, goodbye, Freddy. Now, the thing about biodiversity, well, that is what the problem is there. It's a bit like a Jenga tower, you know. It might seem that just pulling out one little piece, it doesn't do much harm, but pull out the wrong one and what happens? It all absolutely collapses. Over. And we have lost something like 70% of our species in the last 30 years. And the consequence of that is not altogether knowable, but we do know that it's going to cause incalculable harm. And so it matters greatly. To put those things ahead of the interest of somebody making a buck out of mining.
That's crazy. David, just quickly, what impact do you think invective rhetoric has on public discourse and the polarization of political views?
It diminishes the argument. Right? So I just went into a long spiel there about what needs to be done. And there's one thing I should add to that too, and that it's not an either-or proposition. It's a both. We need to accommodate both economic progress and environmental protection. But when you use invective, you ignore all of that. You reduce the argument to something that is misleading, and you deny people the chance to make a constructive and productive case about the very important policies we need to debate. And so what it does is it's kind of disenfranchising. It's sucking all of the substance out of the democratic exchange. So it's And I wouldn't pretend that this is new. It's a standard in politics through the and rhetoric through the ages. But whenever it's used to great effect, the people come out the poorer.
Is there a measurable impact on voters when politicians rely on personal attacks rather than policy debates?
Now, measuring it is, well, I mean, you sort of get your measure at the ballot box. You will see sometimes that the kind of misleading policies that the three parties that are now in coalition used last election worked for them. Or it'll work for them in the next election is debatable. You know, but once people have had another year and a half of this, you might see a decent enough chunk saying, no, I'm not having this.
What role do you think social media platforms play in fostering the use of this type of rhetoric? Because I feel like it's just like a quick little soundbite. People can watch 10 seconds of this on a reel, don't have to think about it, and just go, yeah, that's right, Shane Jones.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. That's why I said every time I open up my Facebook, I see he's in there doing that. And I'm thinking, oh, will you stop it already? And I'm not going and looking at what he's saying to substantiate it.
Mm.
And I suspect that the people who are liking it are not doing anything more than that either, because we know this about the way we scroll social media. We just snack on it.
Yeah.
And it's made for snacking. And we're all consuming this diet, and it's doing us no good at all, and it's turning us into fat wally.
Are there examples of politicians successfully distancing themselves from invective rhetoric while maintaining any sort of public support?
Yes, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz right now, because, you know, that's exactly what they're having to contend with. Mm. And so they're finding ways to deal with it better than the one Hillary Clinton and people like her have used conventionally, which is to say, well, no, here's the argument here, and here's why these people are wrong. And I'm slightly undercutting my argument here, but it's the fact that once that thing begins, you have to kind of fight that fire with a better fire, or rather a very swift fire extinguisher.
Yes.
And in the case of these two, it's to say, first they used that stuff about being weird, and that was very effective, because we all know what's bound up in a whole lot of meaning just in the single word weird, and it's all about your drunk Uncle Kevin and then your creepy cousin at Christmas time.
Mm.
And a whole lot of things as well. But it's also things like she's very consistently saying, let's not go back to that. Let's turn the page on this. And again, that captures a whole lot of what people just instinctively know. So in a way, you're using that same device of a whole bunch of things that people know if you just use a few words, but to use them in a constructive, productive way. And you know, it remains to be seen. You still got a whole lot of people expressing their intent to vote for Trump in November, but the trend is with them, and the trend is with them because they're doing they are taking that fire extinguisher to the flame.
Yeah. Do you believe that the rise of populism, like trying to appeal to ordinary people who feel like they're not being heard, has contributed to an increase in invective language in politics?
Oh, without question. Yeah. We have it in our nature to be unfair and to satisfy our prejudices. You're feeding the wrong wolf, you know, and it doesn't take a lot of encouragement. And you can go for decades where it's simply not acceptable. A whole lot of stuff that was said by the Nazis and fascists everywhere became completely unacceptable to be expressed or even intimated. But what we've seen in the last 10, 15 years, with the advent of populism, is making aspects of it respectable. And as soon as you start making some aspects of it respectable, you move the window a little, and then you keep moving the window, and suddenly we're seeing people saying things that are just utterly objectionable, and othering of people, and fostering bigotry and hostility. It's a really dangerous thing to let out of the box. Mm.
Okay, one last question for you, David. It's like, how do you think the conflict between Shane Jones and the Greens might evolve as we approach the next general election in Aotearoa?
Yeah, I've got very strong faith in people like Russell Norman to also do that kind of fire extinguisher treatment. And sorry, I just thought of him, even though he's not in the party anymore, but he's still in the field, because he had a great response to Simeon Brown yesterday. More to the point, Chloe Swarbrick is really an excellent 95 BFL alum, of course, is just marvellous at constructing a very concise rebuttal. And that's where it maybe goes, maybe she kind of goes to the same place as he is with her social media, but I've noticed she's doing a lot of vox pop stuff where she's talking with people and they're talking through the issues, but not in a dull way, but in a pithy way that I think might be helpful, because in the end What has to be exposed is the falsity of what he's asserting, and you can get there, but you have to be out there every day doing it.
Excellent. Hey, David Slack, thank you so much for this morning's edition of Political Commentary. We'll look forward to speaking with you in a couple of weeks' time, mate. Cheers.
Terrific. Cheers, Johnny.
Bye. You just heard a bit of Political Commentary.